Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network. I am Robert Rogers, the founder of Parkinson's Recovery, and get this, 2004. We have been providing support, resources, and information to individuals currently diagnosed with Parkinson's disease as well as their family members for now, hold on to your seats, 2 decades. I have now aired over 275 interviews with some amazing individuals. I've got an interview today with an individual who is truly amazing and who has made a significant contribution to the health and wellness community. Dr. Carolyn Dean is not only a medical doctor, but also a naturopath doctor and, get this, a best-selling author about, of all things, magnesium. Dr. Dean, thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. And please call me Carolyn.
I will do so. And, of course, call me Robert as well. Well, tell us all about yourself.
Well, it's a long story. I'm in my 7th decade. You've been on the air 2 decades. You've probably been alive longer than that. And we go through so much. Basically, when I was in my teens, I was interested in natural things. I wasn't interested in drugs in the hippie days, you know, in the 60s, but I was interested in health. I eventually went to medical school in my mid-20s because I thought I could do something with lifestyle and nutrition. Nobody would listen to me without a degree. So I thought, well, I'll just go be a doctor and you'll have to listen to me. And seriously, Robert, I thought at that time that doctors would all get on board with nutrition and vitamins and minerals and lifestyle. But it truly went to the dark side in terms of everybody's now on a preventative drug. And certainly drugs have helped a lot of people. I'm not bashing them entirely, but we've totally ignored the nutrients. And we've ignored them to the point where they're not even being properly studied clinically. So I did med school and then I did my naturopathic training. And when I went into medical practice in Toronto, Canada, I pretty much practiced under naturopathic philosophy, first do no harm, and just helping people stay healthy. But because of who I was and what I did, I attracted a very sick population. So I had a lot of experience with all kinds of chronic diseases, and I could see them being reversed, people being helped with natural methods. In the early 90s, I was invited to do a clinical trial in Manhattan, in New York, on AIDS and chronic fatigue using a natural approach. It was a homeopathic acupuncture injection. So it was very, very strange, but very successful. But then AZT came on board. Fauci pushed AZT, and most of our patients in our study went to AZT, and they did not do well. And after that, being in New York, I had written a little health encyclopedia. I got on local TV. I was on the View until they started doing direct-to-consumer drug advertising, and they didn't want me on there talking about how you didn't need drugs. And then I was asked by Random House to write a book on magnesium. I was trying to shop a book to them about Chinese diet therapy. By that time, I was studying Chinese medicine, but they said they had just signed a similar book, and would I write a book on magnesium instead? And I thought, seriously, Robert, I thought, how can I write 300 pages on a mineral? Until I started doing the research, luckily, computers were in vogue by then, and I was doing online research and found out that I was the poster child for magnesium deficiency. So that was it. I mean, that my whole world opened up. I wrote the book in 1999. It was going to be published or released on 9/11 day. And that was incredible because everything just stopped in New York for 2 years. So the book didn't come out until 2003. And what I did, as soon as I realized I was magnesium deficient, I began taking extra magnesium more than was in my multiple, but I got the laxative effect. So then I realized, oh my gosh, we need a non-laxative magnesium, because that's what most doctors think of magnesium as being a laxative. So I eventually had to start a company to make my own non-laxative magnesium because nobody else would do it. So here we are today talking about magnesium. And you'll ask me and I'll tell you that magnesium is necessary for 80% of known metabolic functions. And that includes what happens to folks when they develop Parkinson's disease. So back to you, Robert.
Carolyn Dean's actual best-selling book is called Magnesium, the Missing Link to Total Health. Carolyn, what is the probability persons listening to this interview with you today have a magnesium deficiency?
I'd say it's about 80%. 80% of the folks listening probably have a magnesium deficiency, but 100% require magnesium. 100 years ago, we were getting 500 milligrams of magnesium in our day-to-day diet. Now we're lucky to get 200. And when you consider that I just said 80% of known metabolic functions require magnesium, and you're only getting 200 milligrams, and maybe you need 600 milligrams, 500-600 milligrams, we could all be deficient.
Clearly, magnesium deficiency is an issue. Well, should people who experience Parkinson's symptoms be concerned they have a magnesium deficiency?
Yes. Yes, Robert, I'd say we all fall into that bucket. But what's even more of concern in Parkinson's is there are statistics about it being a dopamine deficiency. But magnesium is a required cofactor in the production of dopamine. And then you consider that there may be calcium deposits in Parkinson's. And magnesium will block calcium. Magnesium solubilizes calcium and directs it to the bone. And magnesium also blocks neuroinflammation. And then you consider that over 3,000 of body proteins have magnesium receptor sites. And if you don't have magnesium in your magnesium receptor sites, then heavy metals can deposit. So what I say to people is if you're saturated with magnesium, you have less chance of having aluminum toxicity or heavy metals, mercury. I mean, we get mercury in our dental fillings, in our flu shots. So is there a burden in the brain of these heavy metals that could be counteracted by having magnesium in their proper mineral receptor sites? There's also all the common chemicals that they're saying could affect the brain. I have a list here, typewriter correction fluid, paint removers, gun cleaners, aerosol cleaning products, dry cleaning may be culprits. And there's hundreds of thousands of chemicals in our environment. So if the body doesn't have good detoxification methods that you can get from the liver being healthy and having enough magnesium, and B vitamins especially are helpful, and certain other minerals. All these nutrients are necessary to help detoxify the body.
Let's focus on a couple of Parkinson's symptoms. Is there any connection between a magnesium deficiency and restless legs and or muscle weakness?
Yes, absolutely. With restless legs, they talk about iron deficiency may be happening. They do talk about magnesium. There are drugs for restless legs, but let's look at iron deficiency. When you don't have enough copper in the body to make a protein called ceruloplasm that carries iron to the cells, then the body experiences iron deficiency because the iron doesn't get to where it's needed. So there's this continuum. You have low copper, you don't carry your iron, so the body feels it doesn't have enough iron. And so I tell people with restless legs, well, let's look at your copper. And then also that there's an aspect of restless legs that can be just magnesium deficiency. When you look at the functions of magnesium, the two main functions, well, there's energy production. It actually makes our energy. If you're low in energy and you're, you know, tired, and if you're insomniac, and you go to your doctor and you say, oh, I have no energy, I'm not sleeping, I'm tired, I feel depressed, you know, and then I get anxious. So you're going to be on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication, whereas magnesium is going to help your energy during the day and relax your muscles so you sleep at night. And the way magnesium works on the muscles and the nerves is magnesium is the gatekeeper of the cell mineral ion channels that let calcium into the cell and cause the action potential either in the muscle or the nerve. And then the cell opens up again under the auspices of magnesium and pulls the calcium out. If there's no magnesium there to guard the cell mineral ion channel, calcium just floods into these cells and they get hyperexcited and until they die. So anything to do with muscles, I say you have to look at magnesium deficiency as the first cause. Same with nerves. So what are we looking at? We're looking at in muscles, twitching, pain, spasms, and cramping. With nerves, we're looking at tingling, numbness. And people have been misdiagnosed with multiple sclerosis because they had magnesium deficiency symptoms.
Carolyn, you explain in your book that calcium depletes magnesium. Please elaborate a little bit more, if you would.
Well, calcium and magnesium are like antagonists. When you have excess calcium, it causes a urinary release of magnesium. I know this to be a fact personally because if I tried to eat a lot of yogurt, it gives me mucus, so I don't eat that much yogurt anymore. But back in the day, if I would buy a quart of yogurt and eat it over 3 days, I would get some of my magnesium deficiency symptoms back, heart palpitations and leg cramps. And that meant the extra calcium that I was absorbing from my yogurt was pushing out my magnesium. It was as simple as that. And it's kind of revealing that you can get your calcium from dairy, but you can't really get your magnesium from your diet to balance out the calcium that you're getting in your diet.
So magnesium deficiency is a big issue. Why do so many people have a magnesium deficiency?
The deficiency that we have, there's many factors. As I said, it's not in the food anymore. Why not? It's been farmed out of the soil, and it hasn't been put back in the soil. Magnesium is not necessary to make plants look healthy and green. They just use potash and nitrogen-based fertilizers and get a good-looking plant, and that's that. There's no label requirements on our fruits and vegetables to tell us how much minerals are in there. So it's not in the soil. If there is some in our plants, then it's cooked out. The way magnesium is metabolized, it responds to heat more than calcium does. It'll burn up into the air when you heat it. Magnesium is the fuse in fireworks, so it burns at a high intensity. We call it the spark of life. And then we've got stress that pulls out our magnesium, the stress, mental, physical stress. We've got surgery stress. And then in surgery, they use an inhaled anesthetic like desflurane. The F, the fluorine part, tells you that it's a fluoride drug. And there's a real problem with fluoride drugs. A fluoride molecule is put into these drugs to make them better absorbed across cell membranes, which are fatty cell membranes. But what happens is the fluoride drug in the intestines will be broken down by our intestinal bacteria and release the fluoride or the fluorine molecule. And that binds with magnesium and makes a brittle compound called magnesium fluoride. And you've got fluoride drugs. Ciprofloxacillin, for example, is a fluoride drug. And it actually has a black box warning that it can cause tendon rupture. Now, they're not saying to the public that, yeah, this drug will break down in the intestines, because people would be very concerned. In fact, the pharmaceutical companies say that the fluoride in these drugs and test tubes doesn't break down, so it's perfectly safe to have a fluoride molecule in your drugs. But they don't take into account that the microbiome, it's one of its jobs is to break down chemicals. So we've got things like Prozac, Lipitor, inhaled anesthetics, as I said, Flonase. You can look up any drug you're on in Wikipedia and see the chemical formula. And if you see an F for fluoride, then you know you have there'll be a tendency for that fluoride to bind with your magnesium, make it unavailable, but also make this brittle compound. It's quite scary, I think.
Carolyn, what are telomeres and how does magnesium prevent them from deteriorating?
Yes, a telomere is the name of the little end point of a chromosome. It's like the end of what do we put in our ears, the little cotton swabs we put in to clean out our ears, which we shouldn't do, actually. That little fuzzy end is the telomere. And with age, these telomeres unravel. And they are a sign of aging. And what's been proven by Burton and Bella Altora in certain studies about telomeres, they've shown that magnesium prevents the telomeres from fraying and breaking up. So I don't know if you want any more than that information, but to me it's another way of proving that magnesium is kind of anti-aging. It will stop calcification, which people say is another sign of aging, because magnesium, as I mentioned, will solubilize calcium that it finds overloaded in the bloodstream or in our arteries, in heel spurs, kidney stones, gallstones, breast tissue calcification, all the in our coronary arteries, in our carotid arteries, kidney arteries, calcium will deposit if there's not enough magnesium to keep it in solution.
How does magnesium promote a healthy microbiome?
Well, what's interesting about the whole microbiome talk, the way I look at that is the microbiome, we say, is bacteria. However, yeast are part of our microbiome, Candida albicans. And I'm a big researcher of Candida albicans. And that organism, it's a fungus, and it lives in our large intestine. But when we take antibiotics, steroid drugs, birth control pill, drink chlorine water, have fluoride in our toothpaste or mouthwashes and drugs, then good bacteria are killed off, and the space that's created gives room for yeast to grow up from the large intestine into the small intestine. In the large intestine, it's in a budding stage, but as it moves and grows into the small intestine, it becomes a mycelial or thread-like stage, and it actually pokes holes in the small intestinal lining and creates leaky gut. And leaky gut is attributed to a lot of things, but with this tendency for the microbiome researchers to focus on bacteria, they really aren't considering that yeast can be part of this leaky gut. Yeast is also difficult to treat. I've spent decades trying to get a treatment for that was simple enough to follow. Personally, I had yeast overgrowth from antibiotics, birth control pill, mercury fillings, the whole shoot and match. So I spent decades avoiding sugar, wheat, and dairy products so that I wouldn't encourage yeast overgrowth, and trying antifungal herbs, etc. I finally created a formula that's very helpful, but there are no drugs for the treatment of yeast overgrowth, because you can't kill off yeast entirely. You have to have some in the large intestine. And also, some of the main drugs for yeast overgrowth are fluoride drugs. So anyway, that's a bit of a sidebar. But what I found about yeast and the intestinal bacteria and magnesium is that 2 or 3 months after our customers take just our picometer size stabilized ion of magnesium, which is what I finally created with a chemist to stop the laxative effect. And I can't name the product. The FDA won't let me say that my products can actually help people. But anyway, after a couple of months of a good stabilized ion of magnesium, people start getting yeast die-off symptoms. And they don't know, they'll call our customer service. We have a robust customer service, and they'll say, "Oh, I'm getting skin rashes. I'm getting gas and bloating. My tongue's coated. Women may say, I'm getting some vaginitis. You know, what's going on? I thought magnesium was working. I was doing so well. And we get excited and say, oh, your immune system is kicked in and it's ready to treat your yeast overgrowth. And by treating the yeast overgrowth, the intestinal bacteria comes back into balance because the yeast aren't kind of pushing out the bacteria or, as I said, taking the place of the bacteria that have been killed. And I tell people to start doing small amounts of fermented foods and slowly build that up to get good bacteria, as well as working with our formula and a picometer silver.
What about bone health?
Bone health is so important when it comes to magnesium. There have been many studies now that show that simply taking calcium supplements puts women at risk for heart disease because of the calcification that occurs in the arteries. And it's only now being recognized that if you have enough magnesium that solubilizes calcium, puts it into the bones, that the bones are better structured. If we just take calcium and have calcified bones, they're more brittle. Magnesium is part of the bone, the solid bone matrix, but even more important, it's part of the soft tissue matrix along with the major part is collagen. And vitamin C is necessary to make collagen. Magnesium is necessary to make the elastin. That's part of the collagen. And that soft tissue matrix is what creates bones that are resilient and not brittle. The drugs that are used for osteoporosis these days, they just encourage calcium deposition and they stop bone remodeling. They kill what's known as the osteoclast bone cells. The osteoblasts make bone, and then calcium deposits and all the minerals. There are a number of minerals that are necessary in the bone. And without the osteoclasts, however, the osteoclasts remodel the bone and make it the proper resiliency or the proper structure that won't break as easily. And I'm talking about drugs like Fosamax, for example. Without the osteoblasts and just osteoclasts making bone, the bone shatters to such an extent that dentists won't work on the teeth of people who are taking these drugs because the jawbone is so brittle. Personally, I just had a bad accident. I fell directly on my right elbow and my left knee. And I was very pleased to find that I didn't break anything. I mean, I had a horrible hematoma and, you know, a couple weeks recovery. But because I'm taking all my minerals, including a saturation amount of magnesium, which is only 450 milligrams a day, I did not break a thing in my knee and my elbow.
Carolyn, will eating certain foods be a satisfactory way to boost magnesium levels?
I'm sure there can be some boost, but I'll tell you another story. I've had vegans and vegetarians approach me at conferences and say, I'm drinking 30, 40 ounces of green drink a day, And if what you say about magnesium deficiency is true, I must have magnesium deficiency because I have heart palpitations and leg cramps. Yet I'm drinking all this green drink, which is supposed to have lots of calcium and magnesium. And what I do is I say, well, try some of this magnesium for a couple of days. You know, if the conference is 3 days, they'll come back to me and say, all my symptoms are gone. So they're healthy enough that the right type of magnesium will take away their symptoms, but they're not getting their magnesium from their diet. So you can eat the magnesium-rich foods, but we don't even know for sure if how much magnesium is in the food supply anymore. And the foods would be dark green leafy vegetables, nuts, seeds, and grains. And what's happened of late in the diet world, people on the keto diet, even paleo, carnivore diet, they're avoiding carbohydrates. So they're not getting their vegetables, not getting their grains, and maybe they're eating some seeds. So we're creating mineral deficiencies and magnesium deficiency in the current diet. And here in Maui, where I live, I'm a major financial supporter of a local organic biodynamic farm. And I've tried to eat entirely off farm produce, and all my magnesium deficiency symptoms come back. So the notion that we can cure disease and take care of mineral deficiencies by diet, that has passed. And it's frustrating to me when I see these vegan vegetarian summits where they avoid talking about supplementation and just try to tell people that all they need to do is change their diet. And I certainly... changing your diet to organic and eating more vegetables and not too much fruit, because fruit is still sugar and sugar can grow yeast, and sugar is hard for the body to metabolize without it causing some side effects like insulin surges. So just feeding ourselves a vegan vegetarian diet will detoxify from eating the poisonous food that we do tend to eat, but it is not going to overcome mineral deficiencies or even vitamin deficiencies, I don't think.
When it comes to supplementation, what type of magnesium should people take, and where can it be obtained, and how much should be taken?
The magnesium supplementation world is huge, probably the biggest selling supplement right now, and I blame my books for creating the education about magnesium, and all the mineral companies that sell magnesium, they use my book and my book quotes to educate their customers. What I say about magnesium is any magnesium, and even a small amount of magnesium, is going to help most people because we are so deficient and because magnesium is so necessary. So I have nothing, you know, bad to say about magnesium in general. What I had to do for my personal situation was because I had the laxative effect, I had to find a non-laxative magnesium. And in doing so, I was able to offer it to other people and have them take it to an amount that helped get rid of so many magnesium deficiency symptoms that people didn't even know they had. So it's the amount of magnesium that I'm looking at. Being a medical doctor, people, even in my business, my company, approach me because they've tried everything and they're chronically ill and they're on a dozen medications and they don't know what to do. And I say if you can give people the right building blocks that are absorbed well at the cellular level, then the body is able to detoxify and kick in and do its metabolic functions. The magnesium compounds that are available, let me tell you about those. Magnesium oxide is only 4% absorbed. So it is mostly a laxative. The other magnesiums, you know, they'll say, oh, you should do a magnesium taurate. It's good for the heart. You should do a threonate for the brain. Or they have all kinds of marketing strategies. But what happens when you get a compound is it'll be called a magnesium salt. And for every 500 milligrams of this compound, the amount of magnesium you get, for example, in, let me look at my list here, this threonate, you only get 34 milligrams of magnesium in magnesium L-threonate, a 500 milligram capsule. Now, magnesium threonate, I'm sure in the Parkinson's world, you've been reading about how it's the only magnesium that can cross the blood-brain barrier and all the rest of it. And this really got me concerned when I read it, because I've read the research that even magnesium oxide that's 4% absorbed gets into the brain and helps people with brain problems. So when I read the research paper on this magnesium L-threonate, what they had done is in a rat study, they had shown that there was a 7% more magnesium uptake in the cerebral spinal fluid of rats that took magnesium L-threonate compared to magnesium citrate, a 7% difference. And with that 7% difference, their marketing team went right ahead and said, this is the only magnesium that gets into your cerebral spinal fluid. And the marketing on it is deceptive to the extent that they'll, on their label, put magnesium L-threonate, 2,000 milligrams. And you'll think, oh my gosh, I'm getting 2,000 milligrams of magnesium. And on the back burner, you'll see the elemental amount of magnesium. As I said, 500 milligrams is 34. So if it's 2,000, 144 milligrams. And then they say, oh, but you have to take three capsules to get that. So there's so much, again, deception and confusion and complexity. As I said about magnesium oxide, it's only 4% absorbed. The rest of it goes through the intestines as a laxative. But when you look at the elemental amount of magnesium in magnesium oxide, it's 300 milligrams. So I just, all of this, the magnesium compounds, it's just a marketing strategy to try to get people to say, well, you know, you'll get a benefit from the other part of the magnesium compound. But if people, as I'm saying, are suffering from over 65 medical conditions that are magnesium deficiency, but they're being told that they've got what? Acid reflux, adrenal fatigue, Alzheimer's, angina, anxiety, arthritis, asthma, atherosclerosis, and that's only the A's. All these conditions can be magnesium deficiency, but what happens in medicine is the symptoms of these so-called diseases are treated with drugs that can cause more magnesium deficiency. So back to you, Robert. I've even forgot what question you asked me.
Well, I guess the bottom line for people will be
So what magnesium product should they really seriously be taking?
I think the best products are powders and liquids. I made mine a liquid. And what you do with a powder liquid is you put it in your drinking water and you sip it through the day. And what I'll say about drinking water, I have a guideline about that too. The amount of water you take in is very important, as important as the minerals. You take your body weight in pounds, you divide that in half, and you drink that amount of ounces of water a day. And in every quarter liter of water, you put a quarter teaspoon of a good sea salt. And by good sea salt, I mean something that has some color to it, which means they haven't refined the minerals out. If you have a white sea salt, all the minerals have been refined out. So you've got now 72 minerals in this sea salt, and it's dissolved in water, so the magnesium, all the elemental parts of these minerals are dissolved and can get into your cells. So with the drinking of the sea salt water, then you stir in some magnesium liquid. I have a liquid, or stir in a powder. Then you sip that through the day. If the taste is a little too strong, then you add some juice, or I have a vitamin C berry powder that gives a good taste to a liquid. You can put a magnesium powder or liquid into just about anything to take care of the taste. And it's frustrating to me, Robert, because some people say, oh, I don't like the taste. And I say, well, just read some more information about magnesium deficiency and see whether or not you want to put up with heart palpitations and all the rest of it, or if you want to just hold your nose and drink the medicine. But as I said, you can put it in your fruit juice be done with it.
I love that answer, Carolyn. What is your website?
I have an educational website, drcarolyndean.com, and that, on there I have my blogs, my weekly radio show, which is on Mondays, and my webinars. I've had to put a membership block on. It's free for most things. There is a charge for my chronometer and in-depth discussions, because the FDA doesn't want me saying that my product can help people. And that's very frustrating. I'm sure you've realized that and you're up against it. It's probably why you start your podcast, to give good information to people that isn't blocked by other forces. And my store website is rnareset.com, rnareset.com. And testimonials about my products, for example, you can find on Amazon. We have an Amazon page with information, but it's about educating yourself about how the body wants good nutrition. We eat to get vitamins and minerals. We don't have vitamins and minerals in our food supply as we should, or in our water supply as we should. So what happens is we keep eating more and more food to try to get those vitamins and minerals, which causes weight gain. We're just eating calories. And the food industry they've co-opted the whole industry to try to get us addicted to their sweet and fat food products. So we have to fight tooth and nail to get good food and good nutrients. And And people will find once they're taking in properly absorbed vitamins and minerals, they lose their cravings. They don't need to boost themselves with coffee, for example, because they're getting their energy from their magnesium. So it's a matter of getting educated, and that's where my drcarolyndean.com website comes in on top.
I'm going to now spell that website address a little slower for our listeners. The website address is drcarolyndean.com. And the other website address is rnaresett.com. Now you have your best-selling book. Tell us all about that, Carolyn.
Oh, yes. Magnesium, the Missing Link to Total Health. So this just came out a minute ago. And it's a short book. What happened, Robert, is my book that came out in 2003, it was like 400 pages. And then 2017, I had another edition, added another 200 or so pages. It's just too big, too much information. And it wasn't until 2018, after that second edition came out, that the research paper came along that said 80% of known metabolic functions are requiring magnesium. So the book, Magnesium, the Missing Link to Total Health, it updates that information, puts down the more than 68 different health conditions. I think I had 65 conditions in 2017. But think of this, Robert. If I have a few more minutes with you, we have 600 muscles in our body. And I'm saying if you're magnesium deficient, those muscles can seize up and cramp and give you pain and just be horribly, you know, intrusive in your life. You have 45 miles of nerves, and the same can happen with the nerves and neurons where they can be firing indiscriminately and causing all kinds of symptoms. So we have the possibility of having hundreds of different disease conditions and symptoms created by magnesium deficiency. And that's where people need to explore what's really going on. In this book, it's a very reasonable price. It's a on-demand print book through Amazon. And it's also Kindle. Some days the Kindle price is only 99 cents. So it's very reasonable for people to get this book and get educated.
There are many listeners who have heard your incredible presentation about magnesium today. And as they are reflecting back on what they learned from your presentation 1 week or 2 weeks from now, what would you most like for listeners to recall about your presentation?
I'm going to make it really simple. I say the guidelines for drinking water and using sea salt. I think that's something that everybody can do. They don't have to think about even think about magnesium, but just start getting their water and their minerals from their sea salt. And as you start feeling a bit better from just that, then you wake up and think, oh my gosh, if a little extra water and a little bit of sea salt can help me, what more can I achieve? And then you explore more. And I should say this, Robert, don't start right away with a whole quarter teaspoon. Just put a pinch in and then two pinches and work your way up. And what you'll find is plain water is so bland after you get used to having the nice taste of sea salt in your water. So start with sea salt water. That's what I'd say.
Dr. Carolyn Dean, thank you from the bottom of my heart and for the thousands of listeners to this presentation for taking the time to give this incredible and informative presentation about magnesium.
And thank you, Robert. It takes a big heart to do what you've been doing all these years, and I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
And you are most welcome as well, Carolyn. And that's what's happening here on the, you guessed it, shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are, of course, smart. All the men are, of course, handsome. And all of the children are profoundly loved. Know that by virtue of this simple fact that you have listened to this incredible presentation by Dr. Carolyn Dean, that you indeed, traveling down the road to recovery, using your own gut instincts and your best judgments about what you need to do in order to be able to have a vibrant, well, and happy life. Thank you so much for being a participant in all that we do here at Parkinson's Recovery. May you have a magnificent week, month, year, and life. Good day.